Am I recording?
You are recording. Your audio, too. Check it. One, two, three. Hey. This is Benny on the dispatch. Hey. Yo.
Attention, yo, attention. It's Benny, and I'd like to mention I'm on the microphone this morning. Honk your horn if you want it.
Bow, bow, bow.
When I say call, you say response. Call.
Response.
Hey, call.
Response.
Hey, when I say call, you say response. And call.
Response.
Hey, call.
Response.
Hi, I'm Adam Hindman.
Hi, I'm Bradley Gibson.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kent Gash.
Hi, I'm Jelani Aladdin, and you are listening to the Call and Response Podcast. Hey, hey.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick.
And y'all, we are officially kicking off Tony Awards weekend. These artists out here are just so damn talented. Like last week, you heard from the Ain't Too Proud Tony-nominated crew, and today's guest originated a role in a 2018 Tony-nominated show. But sometimes it can be so overwhelming because there's so much to see and affordable tickets can be tricky to find. However, Gold Star makes it really, really easy. They just sent out an email with discounted ticket options to Tony-nominated shows, making it easier to join in on the festivities. So download Gold Star and let's make some memories, y'all.
This is actually the penultimate episode of this season.
Woo!
Season 3, y'all, we did it. And I love everyone. I love everyone that has been on this podcast, that has yet to be on this podcast, which is why every week I say that I'm hyped, I'm thrilled, I'm excited to introduce them. But this week, y'all, this episode has been so long in the making, like since 2017?
Yeah, it's been a while.
I am so hype. I am so thrilled. I'm so excited to introduce Jelani Aladdin.
Woo, here I am.
I mean, y'all, it's Jelani Aladdin. Like, I feel like everyone knows who you are.
That's quite strange.
Is it strange?
Is it strange for you to know? You know, because it's like, you live your life kind of like, okay, well, I'm still the same person. You know,
right.
Nothing has really changed,
right,
you know.
Right.
But yet you are now in the public eye, you know. So it's a cool thing, and also it's like a extremely weird thing because it's like nothing has changed except for the fact that I got a better job.
and the relationship that comes to the public with that, of them feeling like, ooh, almost like part ownership of your life, or like,
yeah,
you know, like that they can consume your life through social media and whatever.
Right, right. But it's also my choice to put out everything I put out on social media.
I guess that's true. I know
I try to contribute
media,
good things to the world.
You absolutely do. No, I just think, I mean, you really made a splash when you came to Broadway, of course, being the original Kristoff in Frozen. But you've also done so much more than that. The first thing I saw you in was Sweetie at Signature Theater, which was, I mean, you were dope.
Thank you.
So I can't wait to dive into all of it today. And I want to start out with, how did you get involved in performing arts?
Ooh, you know, growing up in Brownsville, Brooklyn, there weren't many opportunities to be like be in the arts.
Right.
I don't think I even understood what acting really was.
Yeah.
Like I always say I watched movies, right? But I didn't understand they were actors.
Interesting.
And I guess that's credit to the movies that I've watched. You just assume those actors are people. You know
what I mean?
Right. But it wasn't until I went away to high school with this program called A Better Chance. And randomly, on a happenstance, I didn't want to play football. So I auditioned for the freshman sophomore musical.
And that's
how it began.
And what was it? What was the musical?
Seussical. Mm-hmm.
And I
played the Cat in the Hat.
Yes, you did. Oh, my gosh. Producers, we need a revival.
Oh, gosh. We don't need to revisit that. They painted my face white, so I was like a white cat with like black whiskers. And it was a lot of makeup and a lot of dancing and singing. I was like, I don't know what this is.
Did you enjoy it?
I think I did, but I thought it was too much work, so I was going to quit.
Oh, interesting. In fact,
I said I'm not doing any more after that. And my best friend's mom at the time, like, pushed me up against a locker and was like, if you run away from this, you're running away from the rest of your life. And I was like, oh, okay, she believes in me that much, I got to do it. So then I continued to do it. And as I learned more, I thought, oh, there's actually a craft to this. It's not just, like, a luck and, like, a thing. There's actually, like, a way to do this that's, like, that can relieve you of the stress of it being a lot of work, where you can actually begin to have fun.
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of attracted me. It was like, oh, I'm starting to have fun with something for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy something. I always enjoyed learning in school.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. I don't want to be in a class now. Like, I dread classes now. Like, even at the gym, I can't go to classes because I'm like, just being in a class like makes me weird.
That structure, yeah.
Because I finally tasted the freedom of it once I graduated from college.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was so fascinated with studying and learning, and I was like a sponge. I wanted to learn as much as I can. I wanted to learn what the choreographer does. What does the director do? What does that props person do? What does the lighting do?
Right.
What is the sound booth like? I was so curious about all of it that, like, in high school, I kind of did all of it.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized you need to know all of that to become an awareness of how the theater works.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing I'm going through right now with my transition into TV and film world. I have to learn, what is the camera? How was the camera designed?
Yeah.
What is it intended to do? When you write for camera, because I'm also writing a TV show.
Ooh, I can't wait to get into it.
Hey, hey. it's like, you know, just I love learning. You never stop learning.
What was the Better Chance program? You left Brooklyn to do that?
Yeah. So it was basically, you had two options. You were either in a private boarding school, which is like Northfield, Mount Hermon, or Exeter, those kind of schools.
Mm-hmm.
Or you did something called community boarding school, which is where you went to a public school, but you lived in a house that was a boarding house.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one did you decide to do?
ABC of New Canaan, Connecticut.
Oh.
Which is like the complete opposite
of
Brownsville.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
What was the transition like for that?
I don't know if I still have made the transition. I mean, it was so shocking. It was polarizing because you're like, this is a completely different world from the one I've been in and lived in. And, you know, this is the goodies of, this is what my TV show is about, actually.
Yes.
It's about this, the, how do you hold on to your authenticity?
Mm-hmm.
How do you begin to understand your identification and your position in the world when your environment is drastically changed?
Right.
And you no longer see yourself reflected every day.
Yeah.
What does that do to a young Black man? You know, to anyone who kind of is of other or considered minority in this country.
A marginalized, yeah, community.
So that's what it's about.
Yo, I'm excited for that TV show.
Yeah.
I can't wait to, I don't know, run social media for it or something.
Yes.
I want to be involved.
Oh, my God. I would love that.
Isn't that fun?
That would be so fun. I'd hire you any day.
Huh?
I'd hire you any day.
Y'all, that was a verbal contract from Jelani Aladdin. We have this podcast is proof. No, but I mean, I'm very excited. I'm very excited that you're writing this TV show because I feel like, and we'll get into the acting stuff too, but it's another like layer of vulnerability to pull back, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are some of the things you've been learning as you've been writing?
As I've been writing, I've learning that that I've lived through a lot of shit.
Right.
Like, you know, right. that there is, I realize that people kind of have this glossy image of me, right? Like the frozen guy, smiling,
Prince.
Always happy,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But there's really some pain and really some suffering that I had to endure to come out to where I am now in the world. So I think as I'm writing, I'm discovering how cathartic it is to actually release these things outside of me and my mind and onto a page and onto a script and onto a computer and knowing that it could possibly have a life. I understand now why people love to write.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why Lin-Manuel wrote In the Heights. I understand it.
Right.
Because you look at the content in the world and you're like, okay, but where's the content of what I have lived through?
Mm.
Is that even there? And if it's not there, then it's your responsibility to put it there.
Yes.
It's literally your responsibility. You are needed to write this, to create this project, not because you want to, because actually you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm allowing that to fuel me as I create.
And it's interesting too, because I feel like the most specific experiences, the most specific stories that are told are also universal.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does.
Or it's like within the Heights, for example, like I did not grow up in Washington Heights, but I'm like, wow, I love this story. Something about it resonates with me.
The idea of family and community is universal.
Yeah.
It truly is. It just so happens to be through the lens of this Latino community.
Right.
So I.
So I feel like another project you've worked on that I wanted to talk about that is in the same vein of that is Choir Boy.
Yes.
Because like I'm yes. Tony Awards, it's about to happen. But you were in the DC production.
I was in DC and San Francisco.
And San Francisco.
I did it twice. Yeah.
Kent Gash.
Kent Gash directed it.
Podcast alum,
y'all. Come on, Kent. Kent was our director at NYU when I was at NYU there.
Right.
And no, he did not just give me the job because he knew me. I had to come in and audition and have a callback like everyone else. But also, when I got the part, I kind of was like, what? What is this play? And digging into the play, I learned so much about relating to kind of my experience in a boarding school with eight other African American men, young men, still forming their identity, still forming the way they see the world, and still understanding how the world receives them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Terrell McCraney, who is a genius playwright. I mean, he literally is. He won the MacArthur Genius Award. He is so lean in his language as a playwright. Mm-hmm. There's no fat. It's lean. So it requires the actor to be exactly where the play is, or the play will point at you and be like, you're not there. You're not there. And it will actually laugh at you.
Yeah.
And so the play was disciplinary for me in terms of understanding how to have such, because the play is highly emotional, highly charged, and there are high stakes for each of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so to sustain that 8 shows a week was a really, really cool lesson of how much work it takes to be an actor.
In theater. Right. And I feel like, too, that script, I mean, I'm sure it's changed since you were working on it.
Oh, it's completely different.
It's completely different.
Yeah, than the Broadway script. So in my version, it was a mystery play. It was like, who hit Ferris was the whole second half of the play.
Oh.
But in this version on Broadway, we know who hits Ferris, and so we get to dive deeper into the why. And that's why I loved this Broadway production.
Oh,
I was like, oh, we're unlocking more of the characters this way because we're understanding why they went through this. Why did he need to do this?
Right.
Rather than like, who did it? And then so you're like, yeah, I don't care about who did it. I care about
why it
the
happened.
Choices they made. Yeah,
that's elevating.
Yeah,
we elevated for Broadway. Well, so because I was gonna say, I feel like that's such a big script. I mean, I just think of Terrell. I'm like, he is, like you said, a lean writer, but also just like so juicy. Is what the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what when you're as an actor in theater or film, what are you looking for when you read a script like that?
Yeah. When I read a script, and I've been fortunate, and I'm so lucky that recently I've been reading a lot of scripts because people are like, hey, are you interested in this project?
Right.
And as I read them, I look to see if the characters are continually evolving in every single moment of the play.
Okay.
Are they discovering things? Are these topics that I want to talk about?
Yeah.
Are these things that I feel like are contributing to conversations that we need to be having?
Right.
Are these things perpetuating things that actually need to die? They actually literally need to die. In order for new life to happen, things die. That's the cycle of life.
Yeah.
So in our creation of art, there's some things we have to literally let go of if we really want to expand to newer heights and newer places and create things that reflect the world that we live in today.
Yeah. Wow.
So when I read a project, that's what I'm looking for.
Totally.
If not, why waste my energy with that? Because then it's just wasted energy being put out to the world. I saw Hadestown recently.
Okay, way down Hadestown.
And yes. I do have to say, I thought all the work on this Broadway season was freaking fantastic.
Yeah.
But something about Hadestown, when you watch it, you realize that the people that made it, the lighting designer, the set designer, the sound designer, the director, the choreographer, the book writer, the songwriter, every actor on stage, the orchestra that's on stage.
Yes. Yeah.
They didn't just want to do Hadestown. They needed to do Hadestown. And it kind of is palpable. It's a palpable energy that you feel in the theater. And that for me was like, oh, this is why it's a significant piece of art,
mm-hmm.
because it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
A simple story. In fact, a story that's been told before, mm-hmm. right? They literally say that.
Right, right.
But the way they tell it is needed. Yeah. Is needed. It's really cool.
And I feel like they're so intentional with their choices.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which sounds simple, but you don't see it all the time.
No. Nothing is by accident.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I think that's a tribute to Rachel, the director. You know what I mean? Like, nothing is kind of like, oh, I'm going to let that go and then I'll come back to it. No, it's like every heartbeat of the pulse of the play has been selected exclusively to add to the story. It's really, really cool. And it was really refreshing to watch. And I felt the same way, you know, when I saw Ain't Too Proud.
That show.
I also cried throughout the entire thing of Ain't Too Proud. It's not a sad musical at all.
No.
Some parts are, but I cry because I imagine what a 10-year-old Jelani Aladdin walking into a Broadway theater and seeing five outstanding leading men who are, Dominique has written them all to have beautiful arcs, all to be full human beings.
Multidimensional.
They're not stock characters in any sense.
Yes.
And to sit there as a 10-year-old kid, I would be overjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, oh my gosh, right. I can just get up there and do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's why I cried throughout the whole thing. I was like, my God.
Right.
Imagine what the future will be, knowing that kids are coming, could come to a commercial Broadway show and see
themselves
reflected on stage.
What was the first Broadway show you did see?
First Broadway show I saw when I was a kid was The Lion King.
I mean, a classic.
Yeah.
Hello. How old were you?
I don't even remember. I think I must have been like 4 or 5. I also auditioned for Young Simba.
Oh my God.
Way, way back in the day.
You would have been so good.
So here's a story of what happened. The casting director, I don't know if she was a woman or maybe I was with a manager. I don't know who some woman connected my mother to some woman.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought me into some office here in Manhattan and they were like, sing for us. And I like sang like a church song.
I bet you were so cute.
And they were like, do you know any Broadway songs? And I was like, I don't know. No, I got so nervous. I said, no. And then I walk into the train, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Hakuna Matata, it's no passing phrase. And my mother goes, why didn't you sing that?
Oh my God.
She was so mad. And I was like, I was nervous.
Oh my God, baby Jelani.
It wasn't time.
You had to make your Broadway debut, when it was time. But wow. But I feel like, and like you were saying with Ain't Too Proud, like Lion King is one of those shows. Has been the beacon of like black representation on Broadway because there haven't been the Ain't Too Prouds in the past.
Right.
So I consider myself the number one fangirl of Ain't Too Proud. I don't know if they would all agree. That show is just
so good.
The music, the performances, and yeah, Dominique's writing. Like I feel like that mm-hmm. was specifically her writing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It would not have been the same if anyone else had written it.
Yeah.
But with that being said, as we're talking about representation, and Disney, like you being Kristoff, you are the inspiration for so many young black actors. I mean, probably actors of all colors, but specifically for young black actors.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There was one moment in Denver where I was tweeted at, why is this N-word playing, N-word monkey. That was what it said. Why is this N-word monkey playing Kristoff? And I cried. I went to my dressing room. I cried. And Andrew Perosi, who was playing Sven at the time, he was like, man, you can have this one, but you can't cry no more. And I was like, you're right. Because this is the cross I have to carry, and I will carry it. I will carry it. I will do my job the best I can to prove to these people who somehow have this feeling within their bones that my casting is inappropriate, that my casting is uncalled for, that it's for show, it's a stunt.
Mm-hmm.
No, I have the heart of Kristoff. And I truly have always believed that. I mean, he is such... His literal job in the play is to care for all the other characters. Mm. To the point that when things went wrong on stage, I would be, usually it's me, the one who's like going to pick up this thing that fell from the ceiling or pick up this thing, this prop that fell.
Right.
It's innately right because that's what Christoph would do.
Right. It's
you know?
The character.
It's
yeah.
So it was a really cool thing to be like, my impulse is to grab that thing that Patty just dropped or to grab that thing that fell off of Sven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also would be Christoph's impulse.
Mm.
So, yeah. It's an honor, and I wake up every day, and I believe in God. So I wake up every day and I thank God for the opportunity to be the bearer of that cross.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's an honor to walk that, and I'm excited to do it again in the future projects that. That I am excited for. So it's kind of like, that's just the way the world now needs to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy that we're still having the word first happen.
Right.
In any sense of inclusion and diversity, in terms of trans people and black women and Asian American actors and Hispanic actors and Muslim actors and Middle Eastern actors. I mean, it's like, why are we still having the word first? It is 2019. Broadway's been around since when?
I mean, this is what, the 73rd Tony Awards?
Yeah. Great White Way.
Mm-hmm.
...
Yeah, no,
you know,
it's true.
It's kind of like our job will not be done until that word has been eliminated.
Yeah.
Eliminated. There should be no more first.
Yeah.
It should only be, yes, this just is.
Yeah.
This just is.
It's interesting to, and we've talked about this a lot, and I think we talked about this on the Broadway Con panel, which listeners, you guys probably heard that episode, but also too of like, not just, it's not just sticking one person of color in the ensemble.
No.
It is making deliberate casting choices that bring people of color to the forefront.
Yes.
And the fact that you were Christoph and not Hans. I always point to that example for mm-hmm. color-conscious casting because had you been the villain, that's perpetuating something that needs to die.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I agree. Yeah, I believe the word color conscious. There's no such thing as color blind. If you're blind to my color, you're blind to me because I am my color.
Right. Right. There's no ignoring
There's
that.
There's no ignoring
you
that.
You can see it.
You can see it. There's a literal in your eye lens, cataract, whatever. There is a literal thing that says, "Whoa, that's a different color of a human being."
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want you ever be blind to me.
Right.
Because then I'm useless.
Mm-hmm.
The world isn't blind to me. I walk out on the streets and, yeah, I may be Broadway's, Disney's, Frozen's Kristoff, but another person on the street looks at me who don't know that, and they're like, that's just another black man.
Yep. Yeah. That happened to, I mean, and back to Lion King, that happened to Alton Fitzgerald White when he was in Ragtime as Cole House, and he got racially profiled, I think up in Harlem, and he got arrested and could not do the show that night, and he was like, how apropos is this to Ragtime? Like,
wow.
Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Yeah. And
also, like, can we do another revival of that, and can I play Cole House, and
listen,
can Haley Kilgore play Sarah?
My God, yes. I'm going to learn how to be a producer, and I'm going to find people with money, and we're going to make that happen.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I honestly, sometimes I sit around on Twitter and go through rabbit holes of people dream casting y'all and stuff.
Yeah.
But that takes the cake.
Yeah.
That is chef's
I mean, it's
kiss.
The perfect time for Ragtime.
I think so, too.
I hate that, actually. I hope that we get to a time where it's never going to be perfect for Ragtime, but, you know.
I know, but also the music's so good.
Yeah, I mean... Come on, Ayers and Flaherty know how to write a tune. They know how to write a tune.
Haley, if you're listening, let's get ready. We're going to make this happen.
Oh, yeah.
And so then what advice would you give to young aspiring artists who are looking up to you and Haley that want to enter this industry but might be scared?
I think it's something very interesting about being an actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're literally the lowest person on the totem pole. So you're told, right?
Okay.
You're told, after all things have been decided, we now have to find our actors.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, when they enter this business or enter this, I say career, even though it is a business, I like to think of it as a career.
Okay.
Business could mean like one transaction, right? It's not about one Broadway show. It's not about one hit. It's about a career.
Yeah.
When you enter this career, you have to make the choice to tell yourself that you are needed, that you're not, you know, sure, they say, you know, actors are disposable, like blah, blah, blah. No. Sure. Okay. Sure. General actors are, but Jelani Aladdin isn't.
Mm.
What I give you is 100% me, my authenticity, my understanding of the world, my experiences that I've lived. I bring those to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone who decides to enter this field needs to do that.
Mm.
Needs to bring everything that is a that is about them to the table, to the forefront, and celebrate that.
Yeah.
A good friend once told me, you know why people like your work? Because you never leave yourself behind.
Wow.
I always try to find, you know, it's a weird, and now I'm giving away all my secrets, but I always try to find one moment in a play where I reference my West Indian culture.
Okay.
You know, like where, like, you know, one moment, just one moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, it was in Fixer Upper.
Okay.
You know, like I needed to make sure that that dance was a specific kind of of flavor.
Right.
For me, you know, like I could have danced it as like a hip hop thing, but I was like, I actually want this to be a different kind of flavor for me.
Yeah.
So I try to find few moments in every piece that arc back to my authenticity of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we have as actors, as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So. Mm-hmm. If the goal is to just play people on stage or on screen, we need to understand the people that we are, the person that we are, and fuse that with the person that we're trying to become. And then that is a quite unique and special person that we can never deny.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people kind of come in being like, I'm here, I'm sort of doing it. And there should be no words as sort of and maybe. There's only yes or no.
Ooh. Okay.
It's only yes or no.
Yeah.
If you're sort of doing it, yeah, there's going to be someone who's doing it. You know?
Full out.
If you're maybe doing it, no, there's going to be someone who's killing it. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's make the choice to be great.
And 100% there.
And 100% present.
Do you remember your first audition?
For post-school or?
Yeah, post-school, post-school.
What was my first audition post-school? It's so crazy. I don't remember auditions.
I mean, maybe that's for the best.
I think because I don't feel like I ever walk out of a room with regrets.
Okay.
Or like feelings of like, oh, I wish I'd done that.
Mm.
Because that energy is useless to me.
Mm.
It's kind of like before the audition, spin as much as you want and go in there, throw it all away, smack it on the wall, and then walk out and be like, I smacked that on that wall. I can't take that back. Art is fleeting. It's a moment, especially in theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not being captured. It's not being held inside a machine. It kind of just evaporates into the air, and it's like either you did it or you didn't do it.
Yeah.
Either you know, I always say you could be the most beautiful peach, and somebody don't like peaches.
Right.
You know,
which you don't like peaches.
I don't like peaches. A peach cobbler? No, 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 no.
Not for
much,
you.
Much rather apple pie, or apple turnover.
There you go.
So yeah, I guess I do remember every single bit of my Frozen auditions, though.
You do?
I do.
I wonder why. Why do you think that is?
I think because it was so surprising to me, because it was not like. So I went to an EPA for Frozen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember the feeling of someone seeing me for like the first time in like a long time. I felt that way in other EPAs too for other projects that I ended up doing and booking. But for this one, because I knew it was a Broadway show, I felt Rachel see me, Rachel Hoffman. Mm. I felt her see me and be like, "Who?" And she literally said, "Who are you?" And in that moment I thought, oh,
yeah.
I can this could be mine.
Yeah.
You know, it's that slight feeling of like a reciprocation from casting,
mm-hmm.
that made me remember that moment.
Mm.
In a setting where that usually doesn't happen, like EBA, you come in, you do your thing, and you go,
mm-hmm.
right? Is you never really feel that there's like a conversation that starts, but this one was different.
Yeah.
And the energy of what I went into the room was different too.
Interesting.
I kind of went in just because I wanted to sing that day.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to sing and share a story with someone that day.
Yeah.
And yeah. Most of the time we go into auditions being like, I need this job. And it was a different energy. It was the energy of like, no, I'm just here to share.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I love that.
And I think I carry that energy now with me, with all my auditions. It's kind of like, because yes, people, I still audition. Some jobs I get offers and some jobs I get calls, and most jobs I still audition.
Actor, true life. There you go.
But you kind of walk in and you're like, I'm sharing what I am with you. Either I'm not inside your head, so I could never be inside your head. I could never know what you're actually thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I can share with you everything that I am going through and hope that sparks a feeling of being seen. Like maybe you're like, oh my God, I finally see my scene. Or I finally see the character that I wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of actors go into audition thinking it's about them. It's not about them. It's about the other person. It's always about the other person.
Like, this is a masterclass right now. I hope y'all are taking notes. This is free masterclass from Jelani Aladdin. But it's true. And it's like you were saying earlier too, like being present and 100% yourself.
And these things are not easy. Let me also say that. Mm-hmm. I feel like we sometimes say these things mm-hmm. and we think that, we just think, oh man, it's going to happen. No, it takes practice. It takes practice and it takes trial and error. I'm not going to say it's hard because I don't believe that acting is ever hard. I mean, like your job is literally to get up there and talk and sing or dance. That's not hard. What's hard is picking cotton. What's hard is working flipping burgers at McDonald's.
Ooh.
So whenever people say that, like, this is hard, I'm like, no, it could be challenging. It could be difficult. Mm. It's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what hard is? Okay, get up there and sing the damn song.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, yeah.
But it's also not easy. So there is a middle place of coming to, of really. And I also think opportunities don't happen for us until the universe somehow decides that we're absolutely ready for it.
Yeah.
I don't think I was ready for Frozen when I graduated from college.
Okay, yeah.
I think that it took the seasoning time of like learning how to live on your own.
Right.
Of like becoming 21 and learning what the world is like now and at that age. You mm-hmm. know, it took a little bit of living my life
mm-hmm.
before I was like, oh, I think I'm ready.
Yeah.
You know, I think oftentimes we're so worried about working that I'm like, also remember that like work cannot happen until you live the truth of that.
Yeah.
Because what we do is literally we do imitation. And some of us are really believable and some of us are really not.
Right.
But like we're literally, it's all make believe. You know what I mean? But like you can't, as wild as your imagination can be, sometimes you do need to experience some things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, this is going to get really R-rated for 1 second.
Please.
It's like the opening of Frankie and Johnny.
You know,
it's like, unless you kind of had that moment, you can't really go there. Okay.
Ooh, Audra McDonald was out there.
She committed.
She.
And I was like, oh, I feel like I'm really watching this right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm getting heated just thinking about that. Y'all, if you haven't seen it, I don't know what to say.
See, I see how I coded that.
Yeah,
I didn't say exactly what happened, but you know.
But yeah, it's a little PG-13. Well, and then when it comes to actually working with the material,
mm-hmm.
I guess I know of two instances of your career, like Choir Boy and then Frozen, of doing it multiple times. And what mm-hmm. is it like as an actor to kind of find the groove of a character, you know, do a run and then take a break and then go back to it. Is that what is that like?
Well, I think naturally, well, Choir Boy, I got to do it twice, right?
Right.
So naturally it grew with the space in between because even though I wasn't doing the show every night, like, the character kind of was still massaging on me and I was still learning it. So that's why when we got to San Francisco, we won all those awards because I feel like the work was a lot deeper.
Interesting.
In terms of re-exploring it a second time.
Yeah.
And kind of trusting what you've already explored, letting that go and learning new things. Discovery. Yeah. Discovery. You can never... Literally, life is about discovery. So you can never stop discovering.
Yeah.
And I think the practice of theater is, sure, is that we do it 8 shows a week. And there are some times where it feels like you're on autopilot. Mm-hmm. I confess.
Sure.
You know, I'm only human.
I mean, but that's real.
But most times, in a piece, once again, that you didn't just want to do, that you needed to do, you don't have that feeling.
Mm.
You kind of need every night to go in there and investigate the play.
Interesting.
And investigate the character.
Interesting.
Because everyone else around you is having the same need and is also linked into the same energy.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it fun, almost. It's like, okay, we know the sandbox that we're in. Now tonight we just get to, like, run around in it.
Yeah, I like the sandbox. That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Totally. You know?
We kind of, like, we built the fence. We picked exactly what color sand it is and how much sand it is in there.
Yeah.
And now we just get to, like, build our castles the way we want.
Have our shovels.
At the end of the show, and then wash it all away and then start the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with both of those two, like, let me phrase this a different way. Something I really admire in actors is the fact that y'all can do preview performances. And for those listening who don't know, preview performances are like before
death.
You... Well, that's the thing. Like, it's before you open a show. It's before the show is frozen. I don't even know how many times you heard that pun. Yeah. Before they lock down the show. So they can... Like, the creative team can make all sorts of changes during the preview process. That stresses me out just thinking about it.
Yo, sometimes they cut things and they're like, we're cutting it tomorrow night, not tonight. So do the show you know tonight. And tomorrow night we'll do the new show.
What? I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. That happens actually more so than people think.
Really?
Because, like, because a cut or a change requires, like, a lighting difference, a blah, blah, blah. So if you make a cut, it's like we can't actually go back and put the cue in until we go back and have hours to do that tomorrow. So you're like, okay, so I have two versions of the play in my body, and which one's going to come out tonight?
That's actually wild to me.
it puts you in your head a little bit, because you're like, I remember there was one time in Frozen Endeavor, I was like, I don't know what the next word is. I don't know what the next. But it also requires you to do what?
Improv?
Listen.
Oh, I'm like, I don't know what, Jelani, what? Listen. Yes.
It asks you to listen, which is like acting is reacting, right? So I'm like, okay, well, if she's on her game and knows her thing, all I got to do is listen.
And
it's going
to
be like, oh, yeah, that's obviously the next thought.
Wow.
But oh, yeah.
Damn.
It's also like an incredible bonding experience of trust. Trust in yourself and trust your other actors. And knowing that we're all going through the same thing. We're all tired. We're all beat up. But that's just the nature of the job. You know what I mean? Like, we signed up for this. No one held us at gunpoint and be like, you must be in Frozen.
True.
You know, it's like we signed up for that.
True.
But it is fairly difficult to have two, sometimes three versions of the show in your mind. You're like,
Lord.
Especially when they're trying out a new number.
Mm-mm.
You're like, those lyrics? Those lyrics?
Help me, somebody.
How will I memorize these lyrics?
Yeah, for real, though. Like, that's tough. That's challenging.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's hard, but it's challenging.
It's definitely challenging.
And what was opening night like for you?
Oh.
Taking that bow. Did you think about your friend's mom putting you up against the locker?
I thought about my parents and my family. And because my family are they're immigrants. Mm-hmm. And they came to this country hoping for a better life for their children, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a better life for themselves first. And when they had children, the hope was like, oh my God, now they're Americans.
Right.
They will have a better life. And all I could think of was, wow, I wonder if they're proud of me now.
That's going to make me cry.
You know, I wonder if this is making my mom smile. because I know she was in the house. Mm-hmm. I was like, how the fact that, like, I don't know that they, I could have chosen any life. Mm. And this, I got lucky that this is what I get to do.
Yeah.
That for me is all I thought about. And I cried and cried and cried and cried because wow. It's just, that's all I ever want to do in my life. Really. With everything I do, I just want to make the people around me proud. Mm-hmm. You know, I want them to say, I'm so proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good feeling for me. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I have this, I tell my friends all the time, like, when I know I've met my significant other, it's going to be because they text me, how are you today?
Oh.
You know, out of the
y'all
blue.
Y'all take notes.
Just because they care. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a, everybody wants to feel like, did I do a good job, coach? Mm. You know, and sometimes you just need to hear good job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of you. You know, yeah. Sometimes you need to hear that.
Yeah.
And so for me, opening night, the bow, all I was thinking was like, I hope that the world kind of gives that to me. Mm. That like, and it's weird because you should be able to give it to yourself, right?
Sure.
You should be able to say, I'm proud of my work. But I, in this instance,
sure.
Needed it from my family.
Of course.
Yeah.
Were they?
And they were lit. They were like, he's a boy. That's my son. That's my niece. That's my nephew. Oh my god.
Right.
My aunt was like, my nephew's a celebrity, so I'm a celebrity aunt now.
Listen.
I was like, I ain't no celebrity. Get out of here. Beyonce's a celebrity. Jay-Z's a celebrity. Now a billionaire celebrity. I ain't nowhere near there.
Yeah, I would look, but okay. I mean,
anybody
I'll give
wanna
you
give
that,
me $1 billion?
But I feel like you're a Broadway celebrity for sure. If we walked out of this place right now, everyone, like, I guarantee at least, I can't even put a number on it, but people would stop us and be like, Jelani. But well, even when we went to Daddy together,
oh
remember,
yeah,
people
that's
were
right.
Like saying hi, and you're like, I don't know them. But you were still very kind and polite, which I appreciated.
Well, because, like, you know, it's not about me. It's about them, right?
Mm,
like
the, mm-hmm.
Every time they, like, every time someone comes to say thank you to you, it's not about you. It's about the it's about them. That's why we have a curtain call. Mm. The curtain call is not about the actors. The curtain
Ooh.
Call is about the audience finally being able to say thank you. Mm. So you have to let them say that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. I never thought of it that way. Speaking of the fans... What has been, do you have a favorite fan stage door memory?
Ooh, I remember, I think it was like the third preview of Frozen. And this young African-American male was standing out there so excited when I came out.
Mm-hmm.
He started crying when I started signing his playbill. And he says to me, Kristoff is now my dream role because of you. And I was just like, I'm going to go melt
right.
into a puddle. What?
Of course.
Like, thank you so much.
That is huge.
Huge, huge. It was huge for me because I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I think about, like, in high school, like Chris Jackson in the Heights, right? And you're
yes.
like, oh my gosh, like, I could play Benny now because of him. And the... In the Heights now lives on and on and on and on and so many other productions. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, oh my gosh, if that same thing was to happen with Frozen, now Frozen Junior, mm-hmm. you know, I think about mm-hmm. like people doing that show a lot. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like the stock image now for my role is now mm-hmm. a black man,
mm-hmm.
which is like, oh my God, how cool.
Yeah.
How cool.
That's a legacy. Like, and it's crazy to think about, I think, because I, like, know you as a person. And, like, I want you to embrace being a messy person that watches Netflix and can make mistakes and all this. But, like, at the end of the day, like, you have inspired so many people. Like, people listen to you on the Cast album. People are in Brownsville, in Vancouver, Washington, wherever. And they have heard your voice. And they're like, I want to be a part of Broadway because of him. Like, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's never lost on me the like... Because of social media, we have the power mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. mold minds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have mind control, actually. Like, as like actors, like, we have mind control power. And as artists in general, because we are able to touch something that other forms of work aren't, which is the soul, right? And the soul is connected to the mind. And they both live in the same body. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to affect one with your work and affect one with the way you live your life, you're literally have the power to change the world.
Ooh, yes. Speak on it.
You literally, you have superpowers that go beyond being able to belt high or like, you know, twirl your face off or to like, you know, be a stellar actor. Like, it's cool. But like your superpower is really like you have the power to change the world.
Yeah.
Embrace that.
Right?
And I kind of like I'm not going to shy away from that. Like I want that to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
Granted, some people their idea of better is different than my idea of better.
Mm.
But I like to think that my idea of better is doing good and creating a greater sense of humanity, of uniting humans, uniting us. Yeah. We're getting very deep here. Whoa.
I love it.
Sorry, guys. If you wanted a fun podcast, it's not the one for today.
Yeah, no,
I could be fun.
Hey, we fun. Hey. No, but I mean, I think that's, it's a big conversation right now, too, is like, what are we saying with our art? What stories are we telling?
Oh, you know what? I want to share with you something I wrote.
Okay. Oh, my God. Y'all, this is a Call and Response podcast exclusive.
Oh, shoot. So recently on my Insta, I saw White Noise at the Public Theater. I think we talked about this, about how much it kind of shook me and how much I was kind of like, whoa, this play is doing something and creating a conversation that I think, is the world possibly ready for this even? So I posted one of my responses on my Instagram about smiling, right? You should go, I don't know if you read that yet, but it's like my most recent post on Instagram. But I wrote one about what does it mean to be black. And I'll share it with you right here.
Please.
What does it mean to be black? I'll tell you what it should mean. It should mean everything it does to be white. White people have no adjectives attached to their description. Well, some might argue basic, but usually it's just white. Oh, and they have privilege. But black is often associated with loud, sassy, angry, violent, ugly, fat, uneducated, thug-like, ratchet. Why can't we as a race be as full and wide a spectrum as white people? It's partially, no, majorly, because this country began with us as slaves. So from the birth of our societal constructs, we were branded and deemed lesser than, not worthy of, and not privileged to. How do you ever recover from that type of beginning? When there had to be a national war for your freedom, and then again a whole movement for your rights to vote, to attend the same schools as whites, to eat amongst whites, to live in certain neighborhoods, and now we still fighting just to stay alive? All right, to play a bit of devil's advocate, it is also partially us black folks accepting these statuses of low and owning these adjectives because they form a clear identity, which is what we've wanted for so long, right? Some of us rather be seen as those things than not be seen at all. I myself fall prey to blacking it up, whatever that means, and why should I have to do that to feel that I am authentic and valid? Maybe I do want to be seen as intelligent or feel powerful, look sexy, claim my space. Why is that a crime to some and a sellout to others? I celebrate and love my black skin, but I am longing for the day when the rest of the world can see it as not needing to mean anything simply than just being present.
Yo.
That's a Jelani Latin exclusive.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm so honored that you shared that. What did anything inspire that, or you were just sitting on the train?
I was sitting on the train, and you know, oftentimes these days I'm alone, and if anyone uncovered my iPhone, they would find tons of notes of me just writing.
I love that though.
Writing thoughts that I am reckoning with, mm-hmm. that I've like, or like moments that happened to me in life that I'm like, why did that happen? Mm-hmm. Let's really unpack what that means. Mm-hmm. And I kind of write them for myself. I don't write them with the intention to share ever. Maybe I'm, sure. you know, that was my first time sharing that. Wow. But I think that seeing white noise, it was so radical to me in terms of like, this man would rather be a slave. He would rather be labeled as someone's property than be free because he thinks it's safer. He thinks that he can walk through the world with a clearer identity. Mm-hmm. One that would put him at an advantage rather than disadvantage, which is wild. It's wild.
Yeah.
And so I thank Susan Laurie Parks for creating this play, for writing this play. Yeah, and I mean, I've also been bit by the writing bug
recently.
Like kind of like just deep in understanding how I form words and what words mean to me and how I relate to them. And so any chance that I get to like ponder something and sit down and write, I will take the time and do it.
Yeah.
Who knows what it will lead to, but it's just kind of like, I just need to express myself.
Absolutely. And it's good that you're not censoring or like judging yourself before you even write it down. Just get it out.
Just let it out.
You know?
Just let it out.
I feel like this day in social media, this age in social media, it's, will this get a lot of likes or like, you know, will Teen Vogue pick this up?
And
it's
my gosh.
You know what? Sometimes you just have to write.
Yeah. Write. For you.
Yeah. And that makes me so excited for your TV show that's going to be coming up. I'm like so excited.
I'm really jazzed about it. I'm really, really fortunate that I have the tools around me to kind of understand how to write it and the resources and the people around me to support me in that. So.
If people want to follow your journey and keep up with you and see all this amazing stuff that you're posting, where on social media can they follow you?
They can follow me at Instagram at Jelani Aladdin.
Hey.
I promise I don't bite. I promise.
But you have great social media. Let me be very clear about that, y'all.
I promise I'm fun on there. I promise.
No, I feel like you do have a good mix of like the deep, the philosophical, the fun, like all of that.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg shows up on there sometimes.
Yeah, like, Whoopi. Okay. Whoopi.
I was like, wow. No, I love that, and y'all should give him a follow because clearly he is out here doing the damn thing.
Yeah, people are like kind of like sleeping on me right now because they're like, why did he leave Frozen? Like, what's he up to? But. Oh, little do they know.
I can't wait. I'm sure you can't reveal what projects you're working on, but knowing you, they are spectacular. Yes, indeed, they are. You know?
Mm-hmm.
The final two questions to wrap up the podcast.
Yes.
One, if you could recommend a piece of black art, whether it's a film, ooh. A book, a musical.
Okay, so I'm doing this thing for the New York Public Library next week, and I just started reading this. So let me explain this. Hold on. So the New York Public Library does this thing where they do this competition to find America's best young fiction writers.
Oh, very cool.
And so they have a top five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, top five finalists. And so they've asked me to read a selection from a book, from one of the books.
Oh, wow.
At the ceremony or whatever. This book, I started reading it and I can't put it down.
Really? Okay.
It's called Friday Black.
Mm-hmm.
And it is by Nana Kwame Adejei-Brenya.
Ooh.
And it is a fictional piece. I don't want to give too much away. It's a fictional piece about a black man.
Right. Okay.
In America. Let's just start there.
Dot, dot, dot.
And it is so good.
Okay.
So good that I want this to be published and released immediately. And I think, you know, I don't know. I haven't read anything. I don't know about the other books, but I'm like, this, if this is like the level of books that these right. people are, the New York Public Library is kind of like producing, I think that's very cool.
And when are you performing the excerpt?
I'm going to be doing it on Thursday, June 13th.
Okay.
At, yeah, the New York Public Library's annual Young Lions Fiction Award is what it's called.
Oh, okay. Y'all go check that out.
Yeah, it's, I was like, I want to write a
yes,
book. Well, I am writing a book. What? Oh, yeah, I am
Wait,
writing
I'm
a book.
I'm sorry, what?
Random. I'm writing a book titled From Mom, A Guyanese American Proverb. And that's all that I'll say because I don't want anyone to steal my ideas. But
but like you're in the process of writing it for real, for real.
Yeah, yeah, for real, for real. For
Jelani Aladdin.
Yeah, I've been busy. You know, yeah. I've been busy. I needed the time from away from Frozen.
That's what
too.
I was gonna say. Like, if you think people are sleeping on you, like I feel like people do more work when they're quiet, mm-hmm. and so then it's gonna be even louder and bigger when you come back. You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's very exciting. I did not know that. Breaking yes. news here on the podcast.
Breaking news. You guys are getting a lot of like exclusivity on this podcast today.
Yeah, this is like CNN over here. and then the final question is, if you could give a shout out to a fellow Black artist, who would it be?
God, there's so many I want to give shout outs to.
I know. Everyone
Hold
says
on.
That.
Wait, let me really think about this
if
one
you
second.
You want to do a top five? Like, that's totally a thing.
I want to give a shout out to every Black artist that's been nominated for a Tony this year.
Yes.
You know why?
Tell us why.
Because they are all so special in their individual ways. Mm. And they all have offered to the community loud, impactful, singular, indelible work. I am moved by it. I am constantly thinking about it. I think about Camille's choreography and Choir Boy.
Oof.
Dominique's book.
Yes.
Derek's, all three of those boys from Ain't Too Proud of their performances. Oh. Just wild. Jeremy Pope being nominated for 2 Tonys in 1 season. I just Andre DeShields. I mean, they're all killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so, so proud of them. I also think, I'll stop there.
I
can go for shout outs for a whole year.
It's not a fair question.
But it's just,
you know, supposed to, people are like, I don't want to exclude anyone. And I'm like, no, it's about giving love. But I know it's hard because you want to give everyone love. And I appreciate that. But that's a great little blessing going into the Tonys weekend, you know?
I mean, they're all winners already.
Yeah.
They're all winners already.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't really matter who wins the award. I mean, none of it really matters. What matters is that, like, the validation of their award matches the work that they've done.
Mm.
Like, they have earned this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really cool to be an ally of all of them and support them and celebrate them.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great. Y'all, Jelani Aladdin has been on the podcast officially.
Oh, my God.
It's been a long time coming, but, that made the conversation so much sweeter, I think.
Yeah, I think it did.
You
I
know?
Think it was ripe.
Yeah, it was ripe like a peach or a apple tart or
whatever. A pear. A pear is nice.
A pear. See, I don't like pears, but I like peaches. So you can like pears, not like peaches. My bad, y'all. Just like all the juicy fruit. It does the juicy fruit gum. I don't know. I'm delirious. But it's truly like we actually have to shout out Alex Gibby for introducing us.
Yes. Gibby.
Because, you know, it's the industry can be a hard place as much as we love it, and it is about community and finding people that you genuinely like click with and connect with, I think, is so important, and I'm so glad to have that in you.
Yes.
I just know I could like call you up and I have literally called you up and been like, do you want to host trivia in 10 minutes? And you say yes. Like, you are a ride or die, and I really appreciate that.
I'm always here.
Love
always
you.
Here. Don't be flaky, people. Don't be flaky. Stop it. Wherever you are right now, stop being a flake. It is useful to no one. That is the most important thing I've said on this podcast.
That's how I'm in again. Done and done. Thanks, y'all.